Welcome, dumbheads, to this week's megasode of MDC, the Mega Dumbcast. Monday through Saturday, I drop one micro-podcast per day identifying the dumbest thing on every single goddamn page of Ninjas and Super Spies, the ridiculous RPG from Palladium Books. On Sundays, I combine all the previous week's episodes in one megasode, like this one. If you want to follow along at home, we are reading Revised Ninjas and Super Spies, 7th printing, from the year 2000. Today we're discussing page 67 of Ninjas and Super Spies. This page wraps up the eyeball gadgets, gives you various things like the ability to watch television in your eye. Many of these cybernetics are geared toward the fantasies of a preteen boy, I would say. there's a lot of stuff about like being able to listen to the radio all the time, being able to talk on the phone with your buddies and secret walkie-talkies built into your ears, being able to just sit and close your eyes and watch television, having little secret hiding places on your body, and then being full of like secret guns and lasers. It's very much the same design sensibility that gave us the Talk Boy, I feel, gave us these cybernetic attachments in this game. But moving on from eye special features, we're on to hands. And there are many, many hand replacements available to you. Not just special features, but different base hands. I'm just going to run them down for you. You've got the realistic hand, which is weak and fragile, but looks like a real hand. You got your combat hand, which only has three fingers and looks nothing like a normal hand, but is as strong as your natural hand. You got your micro-manipulator hand, which is basically like a Leatherman tool at the end of your wrist. It's got 14 different appliances built into it, and you can use it for doing various kinds of electrical and mechanical work, but it doesn't have normal hand articulation. There's the power grip hand, which is basically just a vice. It's two massive fingers that press together and a wrist motor, in case you need to choke somebody or crack some walnuts. There's the neural interface hand, which looks more or less like a normal hand, is as strong as your regular hand, and can't feel things, just like the other hands can't, but it gives you like a vague neural tingling. It gives you a very crude approximation of touch, like a buzz in your head. Totally worth the extra $6,000 over the combat hand. There's the claw hand, which continues on to the next page. We won't talk about it much. Basically, it's just claws. It's like that thing you did when you were a kid where you'd have like the little three-prong garden hoe, and you hold it and then put your hand back in your sleeve, and so now you've got like a three-claw hand. It's that. And then, my favorite, and the dumbest thing on this page, is the external attachment hand, which is not really a hand at all. I'll go ahead and read this one. A stripped-down device that looks like a metal or plastic connection plug, which it is. All types of common modified weapons and tools can be easily plugged in. Thus, the hand can become an electric drill, screwdriver, saw, motion detector, pistol, submachine gun, crossbow, sword, and so on. Switching hand attachments is quick, about 2 melee, 30 seconds. This device looks nothing like a normal hand. It has no fingers and looks like a mechanical device in place of a hand. The connecting device has a power pack with enough energy to last about 2 hours with constant use. 6 hours is needed to recharge via any conventional electrical outlet. The hand unit is $5,000. Attachments run about $300 to modify, plus the cost of the item. So here's the awesome cybernetic power of the external attachment hand. Instead of a normal, boring flesh hand, that can, for example, fire a gun, or wield a sword, or text your bros, you've got the external attachment hand, a high-tech mechanical port that, if you modify a device like, let's say, a gun, or a sword, or a smartphone, you can plug it into your wrist and then manipulate it, just as though you had a hand. And then if you need to do something else with your hand, other than have it just be a sword or a gun, then all you got to do is spend about 30 seconds removing the current attachment, then fish out the new attachment and attach it, provided you have one ready that has been modified. Like, you can't use a regular gun with this hand, but, you know, you can use any gun that you've taken to the shop and spent a few $100 having it modified to fit into the gun holder that is your arm. This is strictly inferior to a normal hand. It's a cost-saving move. We talked with the cyborg soldier about min-maxing your body, and that's what this is. This is an almost meta commentary on ninjas and super spies, which is, for the canny consumer, how many things do you really use your hand for? In most scenes, you are firing a gun, stabbing dudes, or on your phone with the rest of the party. Why not sell off your hand, use some of that money to buy a special attachment that allows you to text, stab, and shoot, and then spend the excess on other parts of your body that are more important? You have to make a conscious decision that you don't really need the full utility of a human hand for your character, which I think is one of the most bizarre and honest things you can do with a role-playing game character. And for that reason, this is my favorite and by far dumbest thing on this page. Today we're discussing page 68 of Ninjas and Super Spies, and it's time to talk about the dumbest hand of all. We are deep in the cybernetics section. We are talking about cybernetic replacements for natural parts. We're talking specifically about hands, and today we're on to what is called the base hand. It's going to be apparent why this is such a dumb thing, but let me just walk you through. And I quote, "Base hand with detachable fingers. This unusual hand has a motorized palm with fingers and a thumb that are easily removed. The palm itself moves normally, can control the digits, and can even be used with an ejection mechanism. Comes with a full set of hollow digits. Each can be snapped off into two separate segments. The hand can pass visual inspection 60% of the time, although it will not be noticed unless someone is looking for something out of the ordinary. SDC 24, cost $10,000. You can get an optional working thumb for $1,000, an optional working finger for $800 each, and you can get augmentations to your base hand over in the right column of the page, which include things like one of your hollow finger segments is an impact tear gas grenade, one of your hollow fingers is an impact explosive grenade, one of your little detachable finger joints acts like a little flashlight. So what we have here, in essence, is your replacement hand is just a palm. Just one palm, lonely and useless in a cruel world. It's motorized. I don't know what good that does, since it has no articulation. And attached to it, in place of working digits, are a series of vaguely finger-resembling secret compartments, which fundamentally are hollow and can be filled with explosives, tear gas, or secret documents you need to smuggle. Now, we know that most cybernetic enhancements in this game are added to characters who have lost their body parts due to injury. So put yourself in the mindset of a secret agent who's just had his hand shot off in a terrible spy accident. I'm thinking back on the mission. That henchman got a lucky shot. He blew my hand off. I failed the mission. They're giving me another chance. But this is a chance to get better. What can I do to make myself a better spy in light of what I've just experienced? Well, what if, instead of a regular hand, I had had a useless fucking fake hand, and it was made up of tiny little compartments that contained the documents I was smuggling, a bunch of tear gas that busts out when anyone bumps my hand too hard, and high explosives. I would have choked on tear gas and then died, as opposed to living on in shame and misery, as I will with this worthless prosthetic. I mean, just imagine, there's nothing wrong with a tear gas grenade. An impact tear gas grenade is maybe difficult and dangerous to bring into combat, but imagine the stupidity of even carrying explosives and tear gas in the same hand with the things that you're trying to carry and hide, just with your normal hand. And now imagine the stupidity of doing that in a non-functional hand. Because when you're using this supposed limb, which is basically just a really stupid and dangerous storage system for your explosives, you can't feel with it or manipulate with it. So let's assume nothing goes wrong. Let's assume that you don't accidentally bump it against the wall because you can't feel with it, and then have tear gas explode everywhere. Let's assume that in a fight, someone doesn't try to grab you by the hand and end up blowing you both up. Let's assume that you don't slip on an oil slick and take an otherwise harmless tumble, but then when your fragile fucking tear gas hand hits the ground, you end up incapacitated by your own class features. Let's assume everything goes right. This is a situation where you're going to run into combat, and you've got the advantage because they didn't know, because of your barely disguised hand, that you've got tear gas grenades. Okay, they're standing over there. They're in prime grenade configuration. Now all I got to do is take my finger off. Okay. Now all I got to do is throw the bottom segment of my ring finger at them. Okay. I'm going to pull it off because I need to be able to reach the second segment. It's under the first segment so I need to pull the whole finger off. Okay. Pulled it off. Now all I got to do is take off that bottom segment. But I can't do that because my left hand doesn't work because it's all just secret compartments. So I guess with my teeth, I got to be careful. Don't bite too hard. Got to carefully, with my teeth, pull off the impact tear gas grenade. Got it in my teeth. All right, now I got this top compartment. I'll just put it away, but it actually doesn't fit back onto the hand because it's a top compartment, not a bottom compartment. Okay, hold on. I'll just throw that in. Well, wait, it's holding my secret documents. Okay, shit, I'll put that in my pocket. All right, now I got to take out, got to grab this tear gas grenade from out of my teeth. All right, now I'm going to go ahead and throw it at them. And now I'll just pull back out the part of my finger that was holding the secret documents, and I'll just put that, it still doesn't fit back on. But that's fine. I mean, you know, a little disembodied finger bit is not a very inconspicuous place to hide secret documents, and now it won't fit back on because I just threw away part of my hand. But it's fine. I'll just open it up and take out the secret documents, and so I'll just unscrew this, and oh wait, I can't because one of my hands doesn't work. All right, I'll unscrew that with my teeth. It's just the worst idea in a book full of bad, bad ideas. And there really is no upside. Like, it's not a good disguise. You've only got barely better than even odds that someone's going to think that's a real hand. Anyone who's looking for something unusual about your person is automatically going to pick out that the hand is fake. And look, I'm not going on the record against tear gas or explosive grenades. They are wonderful weapons in the player character's arsenal. But there's nothing about this hand that makes it better than just having, for example, a pocket full of tear gas and explosive grenades. Instead of spending $10,000 on this ridiculous attachment, how about a bag? Less expensive, more convenient, less conspicuous, and you don't have to literally pay a working hand for it. Not to mention the fact that you're not only paying for a stupid weapon, you're paying for a stupid, expendable weapon. If you manage to survive a mission with this stupid thing, with this albatross hanging around your neck, you gotta go buy more fingers now. And God forbid you can't get to the cybernetics store or can't afford the replacement. Now you're trying to stay with the spy game, be a smooth operator, with a weird, smooth, fingerless palm hanging off your wrist. Good luck seducing the ladies, lighting their cigarettes while you block the wind with your weird, wrinkly flesh paddle of a hand. Today we're discussing page 69 of Ninjas and Super Spies. On this page, we finish up with hands, we talk a little about arms, but who cares about that? We're here today to talk about the worst character option available to a cybernetics character, or, you know what, the worst character option available to any character, bar none, cybernetic legs and feet. Now, to their credit, the authors of the game realize this, and they say straight up, I quote, "They're not recommended for starting player characters, but useful for NPCs and characters who might suffer accidents later in their careers." So in this rare moment of design lucidity, they just tell you, you know, these things that we're offering you, these things you can buy, it's a bad idea. Don't do it. But as we've discussed earlier, this didn't stop them from creating a bunch of random tables that give you these things at character creation. So we're going to have player characters start the game with robot feet and legs. The foot is where we really learn something we didn't know from Ninjas and Super Spies, because as it turns out, the foot is integral to combat and athletic performance. You know, here we all are, like suckers, doing our squats, doing our burpees, running laps, lifting weights, when it's the foot that is really the key. It's the weak link. The realistic-looking foot is garbage. It can only support a physical strength up to 5 without enhancement. So if you're a regular guy, regular strength, and you want to stay regular strength despite the fact that you've lost a foot, you want to be able to lift and punch at regular guy strength without your foot snapping off, it's going to cost you like $45,000 to buy a foot that can just do that. If you buy the running foot, which doesn't look at all like a foot but is a little sturdier build, that starts with an average strength, but it still needs to increase incrementally. So if you're already quite strong, like strength 15, and you've got a foot that can stand up to that, then you increase it to strength 16. Sorry, buddy, time to go buy a new foot, because otherwise that foot's not going to be able to hold up to the strain of lifting those 10 extra pounds or whatever. There is no way to put this foot problem to bed. Unlike with the leg, where you can just, if you don't want to think about it, you can buy a leg that will match your natural physical strength. It's sturdy enough that it can lift what you can lift, which is not realistic, but manageable. The foot, on the other hand, which I think, and I'm no kinesiologist, but seems to me that all you need on the bottom of that leg is like a bunch of metal in the shape of a foot, you're going to be pretty much okay. But no, in Ninjas and Super Spies, the foot is integral to lifting at every level, and it always has to be continually upgraded to match the rest of your body. And that gets pricey. If you're very strong, like strength 20 up at the near the upper end, even getting the running foot to match that level of strength, you're getting pretty close to 60K just for the foot. Let's assume for the sake of argument that we don't need to worry about going undercover. If you want to have fake legs and have a job as a spy, good luck, but it's nothing but headaches. As soon as you lose those legs, I would say forget about James Bond and commit to RoboCop. You're going to save a lot of money in the long run. But let's say that you're ready for that and you're okay with your legs looking like that Japanese walking robot. What's the payoff? What do you get that makes this in any way better than just having natural, God-given flesh legs? This brings us to leg and foot augmentation options, which are actually on the next page, but we've got plenty to talk about on the next page next time, so I'm just going to keep on with legs and feet. The first option, extra strength. You can't make the legs actually stronger than you are naturally. This is only money you pay to get the legs to keep up with your strength. Extra speed. Likewise, you can't actually make yourself faster than anybody else. All you can do is pay through the nose to get your mechanical legs up to your natural speed. The very last option is plastic replacement parts, which means that your legs are made of plastic so you can get through metal detectors. Not in any way better than natural flesh legs. That leaves us with 4 leg augmentations left on the list. The first 2 are extra armor and extra SDC. Now, in the normal course of events, because this game doesn't really do a lot of called shots, and legs are probably not a common target for your enemies, especially when they're obviously mechanical, this is not really going to come into play defensively unless you force it to. I'll concede that there is some value here potentially in doing an Ender's Game type of situation where you pull your big fucking mechanical legs up to your chest and just hug them tight and use them as cover and shoot from behind them as bullets ping off of your knees. It's goofy as shit, but that could actually work. There's precedent for this in the Palladium system, which is always at pains to tell us in every book, however inappropriate, that you can block a missile volley when you're in a mecha by putting up your arms and letting the missiles blow up the arms so that your main body goes undamaged. So it would not be out of the spirit of this game, certainly, to get down on your butt on the ground and pull your metal legs up in front of your head to use as cover. The other 2 options are climbing claws, which give you a plus 20% to climb, but they're not useful for combat. Costs $4,000 per foot. Incidentally, there are also climbing spikes in this game, which are spikes that you wear on your normal flesh foot. They give you plus 15% to your climbing roll, and they cost $45 a pair. And then the final exciting option for your cybernetic legs and feet, you guessed it, hollow compartments. Simply spaces in your legs where you can put shit. It's like having a pocket in your pants, except it's extremely expensive and requires painful surgery. Paging Dr. Foot, I've got bad news for you. If you are the Wired agent and you have rolled 1 foot as your 1 cyber attachment, there's only room in there for 1 hidden compartment. A foot can't effectively be used as cover. And I would say that 1 foot having climbing claws is not very useful. So the only advantage that you're going to be getting out of this foot is 1 hidden compartment in it. And that's only useful if your foot appears to be realistic and is made of plastic so that you can actually smuggle with it instead of having everyone at the airport realize that you're wearing an obviously crude and hollow prosthetic. So what would be the cost of a foot that looks like a real foot, stands like a real foot, doesn't crumple when you try to lift weights, doesn't slow you down when you run? What, in other words, are we paying for the luxury of a small hollow compartment in the arch of the foot? Assuming Dr. Foot is of middlingly good strength, being a martial artist after all, the incredible power of a hollow foot will cost $65,000, which is, for comparison purposes, just over the cost of 4 full-size sedans, according to this book. For combining the cost of a single-engine airplane with all the utility of a Haida key, the cybernetic foot is the dumbest thing on this page. Today we're discussing page 70 of Ninjas and Super Spies, and boy, it is an embarrassment of riches, and the operative word there being embarrassment, here on page 70. We have been talking about cybernetics, we've been talking about cybernetic eyes, hands, legs and feet, and now we're past the cyber attachments, the replacement parts that you get, and we're onto some more widely available cybernetics, starting with cyber disguises. I've got highlighting all over this page. It's one of those times when this is giving me no guidance at all because it's just a blur of yellow on my screen. So let me start somewhere. So we start off with a couple of fairly unproblematic cyber disguises. We've got a bioelectric wrinkle manipulator. This is a gadget that allows you to stretch or compress your skin to make it more wrinkly on your face. And then we've got the facial silicone layer, which is, it's silicone under your face that you can push a little button to soften it, and then you can mold it either by hand or with like a mask that you've made from someone else's face. There are some mechanical issues with this one, but if only they had stopped with this level of incompetence, we'd all be a lot happier. Instead, we go on to the next 3 devices, and I'll just give you a quick summary, and perhaps you can detect a trend. Next up, we have the melanin release device, followed by the eyelid compression device, and finally, the adjustable hair follicles. As you may be able to ascertain, this is a trifecta, an unholy trinity, if you will, of devices intended to help you disguise your race so that you can masquerade as characters of other ethnicities. We start off with the melanin release device, which allows you to change your skin color. This way you can reenact the plots of racist B-movie comedies at your own table, warm in the sheltering embrace of your other racist friends. The game informs us that using this device, you can turn your skin all the way from albino white to pure black, and that useful steps in between are freckled Caucasian, light yellow Asiatic, dark yellow Oriental, dusky brown, and dark brown. And then in parentheses, American black. The cost is $60,000. Now, there's no denying that being able to change your skin color would be immensely useful for a spy trying to go undercover, trying to impersonate people from a variety of ethnic backgrounds, or just trying to hide from law enforcement or other spies. You've got this ace up your sleeve that you can change your skin color, something people wouldn't expect. However, given the way this book is written, and given its attitude toward various national cultures, racial attitudes, I cannot imagine that giving your characters the ability to disguise themselves as very specific racial subtypes as a go-to disguise move is going to go well. Especially in a game whose premise basically is it's a world full of exotic people who have stereotyped racial skills and abilities, and you are an agent of imperial powers attempting to function within those exotic cultures. If you thought having a player character from Black acting school portraying stereotyped Black characters to infiltrate the white power structure was a touchy idea, how about a campaign where you've got an agent who specializes in masquerading as various races and then gets the assignment each adventure like, okay, your new secret mission is to disguise yourself as an American Black. Naturally, melanin alone will not be able to do the job in some of these cases, and so we would go on to another of our cyber disguise is the adjustable hair follicles. Now, you can change the shape of your hair follicles using this gadget, which allows you to change the curl of your hair. And I quote, "Perfectly round hairs are very thick and straight, like most Orientals. Hairs with an oval cross-section are curly. Fat ovals make the hair wavy, but skinny ovals result in curlier hair. Hairs that are totally flat, almost like ribbons, make for tight, kinky curls like most Africans." That's Africa with a lowercase a, which I guess is where Bell Hook's family came from. For a mere $160,000, then, you have the option of changing your hair into an authentic afro if you're a white character, or being able to form true dreadlocks. Truly, this is your passport to the wonderful world of blackface. Now, I know what you're thinking. Sure, there's an uncomfortable attitude toward race on this page, but what about the uncomfortable attitude toward sex that we've come to expect from Palladium? The answer is it is not far. In fact, in the earlier paragraph, it tells you that not only can you change the shape of your follicles and therefore the curl or kink of your hair with this gadget, but you can also change your length. This is basically this weird silky artificial hair. It's on little spools, so you can change it. You can change its length within a margin of like 2 inches. However, the game informs us, female characters will probably want a minimum of 3 inches, page boy short. So there's just a little tip for you. Like, thanks, Officer Gender. Almost fucked up there. I forgot that ladies can't be bald. I'm glad you were here to set me back on the straight and narrow. Nonetheless, I think that Sasha Velour would be a fine Ninjas and Super Spies character, and I don't care what anyone says. The final cyber disguise for the racist on a budget is the eyelid compression device, which installs tiny hydraulic pumps to inflate and deflate little sacks around your eyelids that will change the appearance of the eyes. And, hold on. I'm going to read this verbatim from the book. Please listen for the intense judgment in my voice. These are used to change the appearance of the eyes from a flat, round-eyed Caucasian look all the way to a full Oriental epicanthic fold. And then in parentheses, what some would call, quote, slant eyes. First of all, that someone is a dickhead. Secondly, that someone is you, author. Don't try to pawn it off on anybody else. I think this would be a useful disguise move to have in your arsenal, but I'm not sure about buying it a la carte with this one cyber disguise. It's only really good for one thing, which is very narrowly disguising yourself as individuals or members of specific communities with an extremely pronouncedly different eye shape than your own. And in any situation where you'd need to do that, you'd need to do an awful lot of other disguise work that this gadget doesn't help you with at all. So it's really more the sort of thing you would do in combination with other shaping and coloring techniques, which you could do with your disguise skill or with the silicone sculpting face putty that we saw earlier. But this device is sold alone so that you can masquerade as someone with your same facial structure, your same skin color, your same hair and hair color, but the magnificent eyes of Shinsuke Nakamura. Which I understand why you would want that, as indeed who among us does not, but it may not help you in your goal of avoiding suspicion in the lands of the East. Surprisingly then, If we actually go back to the professional free agent OCC that we talked about many days ago, that was a character who one of their defining things is they get two cyber disguises, but they don't have the budget to buy two cyber disguises. In fact, they only have enough budget to buy one specific device, and this is it. So the professional free agent, in addition to not being able to compete with real spies for skills or for money, have blown $50,000 of their own money on one cyber implant that allows them to make their eyes and their eyes alone fit in among people of Asian ethnicity. All three of these cyber disguises are pretty bad and likely to take your game in uncomfortable directions, but because it is not only insensitive, but useless alone, and there's a whole character class who can only have it alone, I have to identify the eyelid compression device as the dumbest thing on this very competitive page. Today we're discussing page 71 of Ninjas and Super Spies. There's a ton here. We're just getting into implants. These are the types of cybernetics that are implanted in the body. They don't replace any parts. They're not disguises. It's just wherever you got a space, they fill it with gadgets. There are multiple categories of implants. Next page, we're going to get onto body implants, which are crammed into your various body cavities. On this page, we've got lung implants, which are decent. They'll give you extra oxygen that they keep in case of an emergency, filter out toxins, etc. And then jawbone implants. Jawbone implants are a terrible idea for all kinds of little reasons. The key question you keep coming back to is, yeah, that's useful. Why would I sew it into my face? So I quote, "All the devices listed here are implanted in the jawbone next to either the right or left ear. This location is ideal for communication-oriented devices. The implant can speak or sound directly into the inner ear without leaking detectable noises out of the body. In addition, the character can manipulate switches on the devices by moving the jaw. It's also simple for the character to sub-vocalize, whispering without letting out sound, so that microphones in the jaw can pick up the message." So, already this is a precarious technology. This is, okay, we're gonna pick a place in your head, where there's a lot of space, you know, like, right beneath the ear, and we're going to implant, various useful devices. Many of them devices that you would expect to keep in your pocket, or on a dashboard in a vehicle. But we're gonna put them in your face instead, for a couple of reasons. First of all, it will be easy enough for you to communicate simply by keeping your mouth closed and sub-vocalizing. You know, you speak without letting out a sound, and the microphone will pick it up and it'll be perfectly clear. For example, the first device is a built-in telephone that allows you to make a call to the folks back home, provided the agency has decided to spring for phones in this instance, and tell them how the mission's going. This is totally imperceptible to people on the outside. You can stand, nodding politely at the person who's physically in front of you. Meanwhile, unbeknownst to them, you are calling in to check on the mission. You are moving your jaw in a series of subtle motions that you can use to dial a telephone. That's 10 distinct jaw motions, you know, one for each of the numerals, and then various other controls that you're going to need. The ability to start and drop the call, for instance. That'll look perfectly natural to bystanders. And not to mention how convenient it is. I mean, who wants to go to the trouble of dialing a keypad or pressing some kind of subdermal plastic speed dial button when you could simply engage in a series of 11 highly specific jaw motions? And then once you've dialed, it's a simple matter of carrying on a full phone conversation without moving your lips or Adam's apple or whatever. But it doesn't end with the telephone. There's also a radio. There's also a scrambler for the radio. To use the scrambler, you do have to preset your scrambler settings. But, you know, it's no problem. We can come up with 30 or 40 more distinctive jaw movements. I mean, the jaw is well known as the most articulate part of the body and also the most subtle to move in front of trained observers. But this is all pretty basic, right? This is communicating with a device right next to your mouth, like, predictable. Let's get on to some other applications of that precious real estate right underneath the ear. There's the radar imaging device, a radar motion detector that picks up incoming objects. So it gives you a bonus, for example, to dodge or duck or dramatically backfist someone who's trying to sneak up and punch you from behind. It also gives you the ability to detect and dodge incoming bullets. So once you've installed this gadget, you can look forward to a loud ping sounded directly into your ear whenever an object between the size of a bullet and a person approaches you from any direction, at any speed, ranging from a person jogging to supersonic. It's like having a spider sense that actually goes off whenever there's a spider near you, which is to say, always. Nonetheless, if you could narrow its settings, so for example, if you know there's a sniper loose, you know, and you want to detect small, very fast-moving objects coming at you, that would be really useful. Unfortunately, there's no way to really set the device in that way, since it is inside your body. It's a little bit of a design flaw, but I guess whoever invented it, you know, the radar genius who invented this thing thought, I mean, it's such a versatile and potentially life-saving device. Why wouldn't you want to permanently set it to maximum sensitivity and then implant it directly in your body so you can't turn it off or get rid of it? I mean, this seems like it would be a wonderful thing to have in, for example, your pocket. But, you know, these guys, they don't make any money unless they do the surgery. That's how they get you. There's also an audio recorder that you can implant into yourself for $20,000. It has a 12-hour reusable tape that can't be removed. However, the game helpfully informs us that it can be set to record, playback, rewind, or fast-forward. This way you can do a mixtape of espionage secrets, and then play it for your only true friend, yourself, because the tape cannot be removed or played for others. But if I know the true cybernetics enthusiast, you're not going to want to stop there. You're going to want to use all that space under the ear. You're going to want to fill up that jaw. And for that reason, why not throw in two seemingly random gadgets? The clock calendar is a three-function digital watch, basically. It keeps time, you can set alarms, and you can set it to remind you repeatedly what the time is. You can't look at it because it's in your head. You can't fix it if it breaks because it's in your head. And if you need to go into a secure installation and they're not going to let you take devices, you can't really take it off because it's in your head. But it is directly connected to your ear internally. So if you need to secretly know when it's precisely 7 p.m. every day, then this is the watch for you. All you have to do is just implant your simple instructions using yet another series of highly specific jaw movements. And then finally, there is the gyro compass. The gyro compass, if I had to pick one dumbest thing in this list, it's the gyro compass. Because this is a device whose utility is severely degraded by being sewed up under your skin. A gyro compass is a perfectly useful device. And as the game points out, it's especially useful for someone who is a pilot. If you're going to be in air vehicles, doing all kinds of crazy tricks and maneuvers, moving at high speeds, it would be very useful to you to know which way is north, which way is up, and how high off the ground you are. That would in fact be useful information to have at a glance, but as we know, you cannot glance inside your jawbone. Instead, you have to verbally ask your gyro compass, subvocally, I guess whatever your question is. I guess this is navigation by Zoltar, where you have to go up to it and ask a question and then get a response, which you, I guess, have to interpret very quickly because, for example, if you're flying a jet, you're going to ask something like attitude, and it's going to say whatever the aviation parlance is, that you're like 10 degrees up from level. And then if you try to correct for it, then of course there's nothing for you to see, so you would have to then ask again once you've picked a new attitude whether you've managed to get it level. And then the compass would verbally tell you. So you're going to be engaged in a constant conversation with this compass. So that's the disadvantage of keeping your compass in your ear instead of on your instrument panel. But what's the advantage? Well, once again, it's its ability to speak directly into your ear. So if you need to do secret navigation, then you're all set. So that's something. If you've got people in the jet fighter cockpit with you who you wouldn't want to find out which way is north, then all you've got to do is ask north, subvocally, to your built-in jaw compass, and your built-in jaw compass will respond directly into your ear, some succinct three-dimensional way of describing which direction is north as you hurtle through the air at supersonic speed. It's about privacy, and privacy is a privilege that you can buy for the low, low price of $40,000. Jawbone implants are, to varying degrees, stupid ideas. But the idea that a cybernetically enhanced fighter pilot would navigate by constantly asking Siri which way is north is definitely the dumbest thing on this page. Today we're discussing page 72 of Ninjas and Super Spies. We are on to body cybernetic implants. These are cybernetic implants that are shoved in your guts. Unlike with the jaw implants that we looked at yesterday, this is not a motley assortment of various different gadgets that could all fit where your jaw should go. But instead, they all are based on one key implant, the OBC, the on-body computer. This is going to be our deepest dive into how computers work in Ninjas and Super Spies. And the short description of that function is Disney Channel computer powers. The on-body computer gives you abilities that display the same kind of realism, understanding of computer technology, and design sensibility as one of those Disney Channel movies where there is a boy who is a robot, and so he can do robot things. That would be easily comprehensible to a 12-year-old audience who have heard that computers are awesome to the max, but doesn't really know how they're used. So the first thing you need is the on-body computer. It costs $80,000. You need to have a Jawbone microphone speaker so that you can give verbal commands to the computer, sub-vocalized, because, of course, as we all know, the fastest and most efficient way to input data into a computer would be to simply tell it what you want it to do. Like, Stack Overflow, you say. Computer, fix Stack Overflow. Yeah. So that's the only input. It's a bit of a narrow channel, but what else do we get with this computer? Well, we get a powerful computer processor, a major memory bank, and a read-write optical disk for long-term storage and software. Those are all very impressive computer words. In a strange bit of cognitive dissonance for this whole idea, the game warns us, note that the specifics of computer size and speed are not mentioned, mainly because these things are updated yearly as computers continue to improve. So it's like, hey guys, computers get obsolete real fast, am I right? It's like as soon as you buy one model, you need the next year's model. So when you run this game, just pick the current, fastest, best computer and seal it permanently in your abdomen. It's just a stunning lack of self-awareness. Like go ahead and implant the computer in your guts, but I'm not going to write down what a computer does on paper. It changes too fast for that. So what we have now is like the bare minimum of what a computer can do. So instead of recounting all the things that this computer doesn't have, like, for example, the ability to interact with physical media, an input device that allows you to do any work worth doing, a display, let's just see what you are offered, like what cool options you can add to this computer, and we'll be able to kind of glean how you're meant to use it. So the first one is a speech synthesizer chip. This allows you to, it allows the computer to talk to you in your head. That's a very, like, movie or comic booky thing for a computer to do when it's built into your body. Like in the old Deathlok comic, you have those little, like, green speech bubbles with the computer writing, with the computer who would always argue with Michael. It was a cool comic. I gather that that character has appeared on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., which is a show that I don't watch. Does Deathlok drink Ensure on that show? If not, I have no time for it. In the comic, you could always see him drinking old people's smoothies. It was one of my favorite things. So computer power number one, the computer can talk to you in your head. With appropriate programming, it can also imitate and transmit other voices through other implants. So if you're lucky enough to have a robot mouth, then you can use your computer to imitate people's voices and project them through your robot mouth. There's computer power number two. There's another option you can get, the remote modem OBC option. This allows you to use narrow channel radio to interact with standard telephone lines to access computer networks. We're then informed that characters who take this option have to use the computer network skill to infiltrate secure computer systems. One of the most infuriating things about Palladium RPGs is that the rules are the last place you expect to find them. As vague as they are, I think these are the closest we get to like rules for hacking, and they're not in the Hacker Gizmeteer program, they're not under computer networking, they're not under the descriptions of the regular modems that regular people use, they're only here under the description of the remote modem attachment to the cybernetic belly computer. Interestingly, the range of the modem is 12 feet. Now you may ask yourself, what does it mean to have a 12-foot range on a modem? And the answer is Disney Channel computer powers. You don't have this modem so you can like Google shit in the middle of a mission, or so that you can sit at home and like crack a bank's servers so that you can get confidential information about its clients and figure out what a corporation's up to. No, this modem is so that you can be driving down the street and you hit a red light, and then you, you know, grab your Bret the Hitman Hart sunglasses and pull them down over your nose and are like, we don't have time for this. We've got cyber business. And you stare at the light and you make it turn green so that you get to cut off the other traffic and, you know, speed onto your destination. It's that kind of hacking. It is definitely like, what is a plausibly hackable thing within 12 feet of me? I will reach out through the phone lines and bend it to my will. Along those lines, there's also a Tempest monitor option that allows you to pick up signals to video screens. This works within 500 feet. It can read, you know, anything displayed on the screen. But importantly, there's as yet no way for the belly computer to convey this information to you, right? Like you could pick up what's on a view screen, but then how does the computer portray that to you? Because there's no monitor or anything. And so, the Tempest Monitor has a second, actually much more useful feature. And I quote, "Any computer monitor, television, or cathode ray tube device within 150 feet can also be used as a display device by the on-body computer." Now this delights me because I have a very specific nostalgic connection here. Around the same time that I was first playing Ninjas and Super Spies, I also had this little portable black and white TV set meant for camping, although I never would and never will camp. All I did with it was stay up past my bedtime and watch, ironically, In Living Color, which was a TV show I was not allowed to watch. I've often reflected on how quaint a childhood device this is now in a time when, you know, every child has the whole fucking media of the planet available at their fingertips at all time. Like, everyone is carrying this computer screen everywhere. But what you can't do with a smartphone or an iPad is pick up your belly computer's output on a portable CRT television. So I'm ready to play a belly computer super spy who carries around his little black and white camping television so that he can point with one finger at secret bad guys' secret view screens 500 feet away, then point with his other finger at his portable black and white camping television and display what's on that one evil screen onto what's on his good nostalgic TV screen in his passenger seat or whatever while he does the stakeout. That, my friend, is the very meaning of Disney Channel computer powers. There's one more option closer to what you would really use a computer for, the cryptographic decoding processor chip. Unfortunately, the only input this belly computer seems to have is through standard phone lines, so if you have sensitive encoded information, you're unfortunately going to have to fire up the old 56.6K and I guess just send it as an attachment to bellycomputer1 at CIA.gov. Disney Channel computer powers absolutely fit the tone of this game, and I have no problem with their being here. But in addition to the supercomputer powers, there's also this weird, like, retro aspect where you're using dial-up and you wouldn't be able to do a lot of conventional computer stuff because of the lack of inputs or ability to connect to other devices. Nothing better sums up that dichotomy than the ability to project your belly computer's display onto any television within 150 feet of you, but only if it's a CRT. And for that reason, that specific power is the dumbest thing on this page. So that's mostly it for cybernetics. Join me next time for something completely different on MDC, the Mega Dumbcast. This has been Mega Dumbcast. It is Mega Dumbcast on Twitter, Instagram, Gmail, Podbean, your favorite podcatcher, etc., etc. New episodes drop every day, except for Sundays, when all the previous week's episodes drop in one big chunk for your binging convenience. MDC, Palladium Books, Ninjas and Super Spies, and all associated trademarks are property of Kevin Ciambietta. This slightly annoying theme song is Cartoon Battle by Kevin MacLeod, whose work you can find at incompetech.com. The gong sound effect was recorded by Daniel Simon. Dumbheads, I will catch you next time.